This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So I was quite a mad Alice Cooper fan when I was a kid.
I was a big Alice Cooper fan. I remember back at primary school, it was a big thing, because obviously I'm that much younger than you, Gary. But I remember Welcome to My Nightmare being a really serious album.
Yeah, well, I go back to probably School's Out, right, which had that really bizarre cover. But I remember the cover was the school desk with all the...
It was the school desk, yeah, but I remember thinking, I've never seen... Is that what school desks look like in America? Because I'd never seen one like that.
All right, because where did you go? You all stood up at your school, did you?
No, Friars Primary, mate.
No, but inside, remember, was a pair of paper knickers.
Knickers, yeah.
Panties, they would have been called. I'm not sure you could get away with this now, but
simpler times.
And his albums, the albums were always really beautifully presented, because Billion Dollar Babe
is that fantastic snakeskin wallet that you opened up.
Yeah, with the money in there and the
money in there. Yeah. What's interesting, I don't know, Mike, is that how, because Bob Ezrin was so much a part of their story, and it was of him and Alice getting each other, and it's very interesting seeing actually how much of that stuff with Bob seeped into the wall.
Yeah, I was thinking that, because there's a track where at the end there's a judge shouting, and then you hear
the trial. The trial, which is actually co-written by Bob, and there's the whole thing in the flesh, which isn't a million miles from. It's much darker, but Hello Hooray, that same sort of thing. And Hello School Kids Singing.
Of course. There's so much to ask Alice about, and he's just about to enter the room, and we only have 30 minutes with him. Let's go. Welcome to the Rock and Tours.
Okay, guys, I'm ready.
Well, it's a big tune for sure. I actually wrote that originally for Tina Turner.
Of course, I had gone and found Joni Mitchell down in Florida and brought her back.
You know, what people forget about Bowie is that he was such a kind man.
Remember me? I'm in a band now. It's called Roxy Music.
You know this thing about the 10,000 hours of experience?
Oh, yeah.
Something. When we recorded Arnold Lane, we'd done about 50 hours.
The Rock On Tours podcast with Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
How beautiful to see you.
Thank you.
Fantastic to see you.
Where are you coming from?
I'm in Arizona, where it's 80 degrees today, and everything is open.
What?
Wow. Is that a good thing?
I got my shot yesterday, my first shot. Yeah, my vaccine yesterday, and then I get another one 21 days from now. But, everybody's going to get it anyway, so...
When you say everything's open, you don't mean the theaters, so the concerts aren't on, are they?
Not concerts, no. My movie theaters, all the malls are open. It's pretty loose here.
Yeah.
You must be feeling bulletproof now.
When I came back, I was in Germany last March, and we finished the show in Germany, and they told me, we're closing the borders in 24 hours. Get out. And I got back to Phoenix, and everything was closed down, except... the golf courses.
Wow.
I don't care who this governor is. I don't care if he's a cannibalistic Taliban. I'm voting for him.
But how has it been for you? Because you're a man who's used to working nonstop, aren't you? You know, to not be on the road for you is anathema, right?
Really unusual. Really unusual. We had to cancel 190 cities, 17 countries, and that's normal. That's a normal year for us. Between my band and the Hollywood Vampires, that's two tours that I'm on. And so it's very unusual to be home for a year. You've been on tour, you know what it's like, 3 weeks off is like a long time, but when you're off for a year, it's like, wow, I have to learn how to be a human again.
Your wife's thinking, why am I with this guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the thing about it is Cheryl's in the show. She's also in The Vampires.
And that's how you met, in fact. You met your wife on tour, didn't you?
That's right. She auditioned for the Welcome to My Nightmare show. And she was heads and tails above every... We were looking for Broadway dancers, not rock and roll dancers. And she was she was like the prima ballerina. And immediately we picked her up and said her, because she was just such a good dancer. I didn't really even meet her till the tour started. because the rehearsals were so intense that you never had time to really talk to anybody. And then when the tour started, she was a giant tooth at one point in the show. With legs coming out in high heels, right?
Oh, and that would do it for me.
And I'm sitting across from her on an airplane, and I look at her legs, and I went, "You're the tooth."
But so you basically got to know her in 5-minute segments during the show every night.
Exactly. She played about 8 different characters. She was a dancing skeleton. She was a snake. She was this and all. And finally, you know, I had a couple of days off and I went, I got to get to know some of these people. Well, we hired 2 girls and 2 guys, which ended up being 4 girls, but.
There you go. Alice, this new album is all about you going back to where your band was spawned. It's a confusing bit of geography, really. You're born in Detroit, you move to Phoenix,
yeah.
You go to LA. I mean, I'd love to talk to you about all the Canyon stuff that you somehow, this weird bunch of weirdos that you like yourselves in the middle of a hippie canyon seems so strange. But then you go back to Detroit and you become the band we know. I mean, the album, they're all about that period.
Well, what it was, I'm born in Detroit and I had asthma, so I had to get out of there. It was too cold. So they moved to Arizona and we moved to Arizona and I grew out of the asthma. But in high school, I'm painting a house one day in the summertime, and all of a sudden I hear, "She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah." And I went, we were listening to Four Seasons and the Beach Boys, you know, and I went, "What was that?" I mean, I'd never heard about the Beatles. And then all of a sudden, an hour later, I heard, "Please, Please Me, I Want to Hold Your Hand." And I just went, "What is going on?" You know, I called my best friend, Dennis Dunaway, who ended up being the bass player in the band. And I said, what is this music? And then we started understanding who the Beatles were. And we immediately started a band and ended up being the Spiders. And we were the biggest band in Phoenix. So we ended, in fact, at one point, you're going to love this. We were the Yardbirds band.
I want to go back to your first performance. Your first performance, though, wasn't it when you rewrote a load of Beatles songs at your high school? Now, is there a recording of, does that exist? Is there any record of that?
I wish there were. That's because that would be something. We were all on a track and cross country team. We were all distance runners, 1500 meters, 3000 meters. And we were all Lettermen, you know, I mean, we were the big deals, 4-year Lettermen. And we got up on stage, put the Beatle wigs on, you know, and kind of mouthed, "I'll beat you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll beat you." And we changed it to track and cross country. Just, you know, we thought that's funny. That'll be funny. And right then we had the bug. We just looked at each other and went, "We got to really do this. You know, we got to find 2 guitar players." and here is something really strange about it. We were all in journalism also. We were journalism students. So in the journalism room, there was a guillotine. And if you were late on an assignment, they put you in the guillotine for 5 minutes.
Oh my God.
The very first time, I'm 16 years old, I'm on stage and there's a guillotine and there's a casket there because a friend of ours came out of the casket and introduced us. So was that like
prophetic?
Yes. Was that prophetic for what we were going to end up doing? I swear that happened.
But you know, you were all very into your art as well, weren't you? I mean, because the art in the performance art that you guys ended up doing had a lot to do with Dada and surrealism.
Absolutely. That was in the DNA somehow. We learned every Who song. We learned every Yardbird song. We learned, you know, so we were a pretty good band, pretty good cover band. And on top of it, we couldn't help from adding that bit of theatricality to it. You know, in other words, if I found a mop backstage, that could be a girl with the hair, you know, that could be something to ride on. That could be a weapon. That could be, so it was guerrilla theater. We couldn't afford actual props, you know, that developed later when we had money, where we could actually do a show. But, you know, I, the funniest thing was we were 16, 17 years old. We were the Yardbirds band and we're opening for the Yardbirds, the real Yardbirds with, you know, Jeff Beck and everybody.
How did that feel? Were you terrified?
Oh, well, yeah, we got to open since we were the house band. We opened for the Birds, the Hollies, the Lovin' Spoonful, every band. We were the opening act for them, right? But then the Yardbirds come in and we go, oh my gosh, we do all Yardbird songs. What are we going to do? So we got up there and we did the whole set, the whole Yardbird set. And in the back of the room, I could see Keith, Ralph, and Jeff Beck, and they're all giving us a thumbs up. Yeah, yeah. And then they got on
stage. I hope they liked it.
Oh, they loved it. No, they loved it. And they got on stage and blew us off the stage. They were the Yardbirds. Come on. You know, they were the original Yardbirds. Yeah. And they were, you know, maybe the best live band next to Paul Butterfield that I've ever heard in my life. You know,
Alice, you know, we're sort of so in awe when we hear those names you were supporting, but everybody was kids then. Even the oldest person in rock was a kid.
Yeah. Jeff Beck was 19.
This is a youth movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And we were so in, you know, just absolutely awed by these bands. I never heard a band sing with tighter harmony than the Hollies live. Yeah, they were amazing. Live. And the Yardbirds were, you know, you think, well, the records are great. I wonder if they're going to be that good live. They were better live than they were on the record. You know, I mean, it was one of those things where you really got to see them at their best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, Graham Nash ended up staying there, didn't he? In LA, when he went to LA, he stayed there. But you went to LA then with your band, didn't you?
Well, that's where the record companies were. So we finally decided we got to go to LA. The very first people that we met were the Doors and the Mothers.
Now, was it, talking of which, yeah, that's right, because wasn't it you who came up with the line, I woke up this morning and poured myself a beer?
Yeah, that's right. I was sitting there with Jim. Jim was writing something and we were both drinking. And, you know, and he's just going, what's up, man? And I said, well, I got up this morning, got myself a beer and da, 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 da. And he's writing it down. Every time I hear that line.
Did you get a piece of that?
No. But I know it's my line.
That's incredible. But so you ended up in the Zappa set, didn't you? With the GTOs, you know, these fabulous women that were into the most extraordinary fancy wear costumes and.
Oh yeah, they were amazing. They were amazing. They were.
Yeah, but what seems amazing is that how these kids from Phoenix go to LA and walk straight into that. I mean, how you managed to get straight there.
No, we starved. We starved every weekend. We'd play a bar, any place we could play. And basically we finally got a house gig at a place called, it was out on Malibu, you know, the Cheetah Club. And there we are at the Cheetah Club and we're the band, except that we're opening for Pink Floyd. And I didn't know who they were, you know, it was one of those things where we finally got into the Whiskey A Go Go. I mean, I looked at the thing and it said Alice Cooper and I said, who's Led Zeppelin? We were both unknown. Totally
that
unknown.
That would have been Syd Barrett's one trip. That was Syd Barrett's one trip to America, wasn't it?
You know what? They came in and we were already very hip to Piper at the Gates of Dawn. So we knew who Pink Floyd were. Mm-hmm. And when we saw them, we were fans of theirs. Yeah. Just that first record. But like anybody else, you come to America and you're not making money. You're just making enough to get your name out there. And they ran out of money and moved in with us. And so Alice Cooper and Pink Floyd for two or three nights in Malibu. Yeah, we had a house where I get up in the morning and there's Syd Barrett and he's looking at a box of cornflakes. And apparently they're dancing for him and they're doing a whole show. The box of cornflakes are. And we're going.
I've played with Pink Floyd for 35 years. This is the first time I'm hearing this. This is.
Oh, if you remember, ask him, ask Nick. You know.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an incredible story. Because Pretty's for You with the first Alice Cooper album, and we've sort of jumped a bit here, really.
Yeah.
But that has a lot of Syd and Piper on it, doesn't it?
Well, Syd was so cool, but he was so out there. I mean, he was just, you know, I mean, you could talk to the other guys. Syd was just in another realm. He didn't really talk. He just kind of like, you know, he was a satellite, you know, he was so creative. Him and my guitar player, Glenn, they would go in a bedroom with two echoplexes and just play sounds back to each other.
To have had that recorded.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, it wasn't, but they did come stay with us for a couple nights. And in fact, we were doing an audition for Gazzari's and they said, hey, we're going to make brownies.
Oh, see where this is going.
And halfway, they were sitting there during the audition. They were in the afternoon. All the Pink Floyd guys are sitting there. We're on stage auditioning. And I fell off the stage three times. I was so high on these brownies. And Dennis was like falling over the drums and everything. And they were laughing their heads off. you know, because we were used to smoking. We weren't used to eating it, you know. It's a different buzz.
Show, and I mean, I've seen some old footage. Your show was so theatrical even then. I mean, you were wearing the, I mean, I guess the GTO girls had dressed you up. And Pamela had that kind of eyelash makeup, didn't she, on that she must have put on.
Yeah, we were doing makeup before that. But what they did was they came in and they said, look, you know, why do you want to look like everybody else? You know, well, we didn't, you know, we were certainly not like every other band. In fact, we were probably, people came to see us in LA just so they could say that they walked out on us. And, you know, it was sort of like, we were the bad vibe. Everybody was on acid and we didn't mind a little violence on stage. We didn't mind a little bit of, you know, in your face violence, real switchblades, real blood. And the audience, I mean, would run for the doors. They hated it.
Tell us about, but this, and whilst dressed in Ice Capades outfits.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Well, Ice Capades came into town.
Explain what that is for our English listeners.
Okay, the Ice Capades, the garish, you know, horrible, you know, stuff. They were leaving town and they were going to get rid of all their old costumes. So they were selling them for 50 cents a pound. What you see on the back of Pretty's for You is all Ice Capades outfits. Because to us, it looked cool. It was sparkly and it, you know.
And this is before Roxy Music did their, you know, famous, yeah, you know, cover. It's before Bowie. I mean, I don't know. I'm a bit worried. I wonder about that timeline because I know that Bowie played the Roundhouse famously wearing some sort of glitter in about 1970. But you guys were doing it then as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, Bowie used to come to the shows and bring the spiders and say, this is what we should be doing.
Yeah, because, of course, you were the spiders at one point,
yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Not only were they spiders, they were the Nazz as well, which is both mentioned in the Ziggy Stardust song.
Yeah, and isn't that funny? And I got along with David really well. You know, I mean, he was a mime artist, I think, when he came to see us. You know, in the thing. And
well, it's interesting because all those English bands, right, that you love, you talk about The Who, but then we talk about the Bowie and Roxy Music and all that, they all came from sort of art school backgrounds. So the art thing was built in, whereas you just had the art thing without the art school.
That's right. We were big Salvador Dali fans.
Yeah.
You know, that was our thing. That he was our, you know, our idol. And later on, we got to actually work with him. Yeah, which was one of the most bizarre things ever, you know.
Yeah, but would love to talk about that hologram thing, which seems...
It was, here was Dali, you know, you expect him to be bizarre. The very first time we meet him, Shep and I are at the one of the hotels in New York City, and he's going to come in. We're sitting there at a table, and all of a sudden, seven nymphs come in. I don't know. I don't know, male or female, honestly, don't know. But they came in all,
seven?
Yeah, they came dancing into the room. And then Gala comes in, his wife.
Yeah.
And she's in a full Fred Astaire tuxedo, top hat, white gloves, cane, spats, the whole thing. And then the Dali is here. And he's got giraffe pants on. And he's got a pair of Aladdin shoes that kind of like, you know, twirl up at the end. Yeah. I mean, and he was just what you wanted him to be. He sits down.
And this is breakfast, right?
Yeah. He sits down. He orders everybody a drink called a scorpion, which is every kind of alcohol in a shell with a lilac or something floating in it. And then he orders himself a glass of hot water. He reaches in his pocket, pulls out a jar of honey, and starts pouring the honey in the glass. And Shep and I are like, you know. And then he takes a pair of scissors out and he cuts the flow of the and you know, Shep and I are like, you know, Max Bialystock and Bloom, you know, we're going, he's got a honey, baby, flaunt it. Well, we were both going, he's got scissors, I know, just go along with it.
But this is extraordinary validation for you, isn't it? Because what you do is not just music. You know, you're not just a rock performer, you're a performance artist as well. And to have the greatest performance artist in the world come to you and almost pass the baton.
Well, he went to a show and he said, this is surrealism. This is based on me. He was very egotistical and I got it. That was over the top egotistical. This is all about me. And, you know, we went, yeah, it's about you. You know, Groucho Marx saw the show and thought it was vaudeville. And so, you know, I mean, everybody that saw it in a different way. And, but Dali, so I worked with him for a week. And you have to understand, he speaks one word in Italian, one word in Spanish, one word in English. And you're getting one word out of five words for a week. And we got this whole project done. And we do the press conference. And they said, what was it like working with Dali? And I said, I have no idea. I didn't understand a word he said the whole time, you know. And he stands up and he goes, perfect. He says, the perfect form of communication is chaos. And I looked at him, I went, you speak English? Well, of course I do, you know.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, I mean, let's go back to Detroit before all that happened, and your band basically get kicked out of LA.
We didn't work there.
What's interesting is this boy who's formed a band in Phoenix is still appropriate for Detroit, because when you go back to Detroit, you realize, actually, this is the music I've been making all my life.
You know, and it started at a very small seed in Detroit when I was 7 years old. I saw Elvis Presley on the Ed Sullivan Show. I immediately went in my room and started, you know, imitating him. All my uncles walked right out of Guys and Dolls. I had Ratsy Bowers, Jocko, and my dad, Mick. These guys They were at the track every day.
Right.
Okay. So finally my uncle Jocko comes in and he played Telecaster. Right. And he says, you like Elvis? And I went, yeah. And he says, then you're going to love this. And he puts on Chuck Berry.
That
was the first record I ever heard that was driven by guitar, electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And I went, what was that? That was the seed right there. To this day, Chuck Berry's still the greatest lyricist of all time. I mean, if he can't think of a word, he makes one up. don't give me no botheration. The coolerator was full of ginger ale. The coolerator, what's that? You know, he could tell a story in 3 minutes with a punchline. And he did it 100 times every time he did it. So that was the root. When we started playing the original band, what did we learn? We learned Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
You know, that's the basis of all hard rock.
When you get to, and there's a fantastic thing on the new album, Alice, where you do that great song, Detroit City, where there's that fantastic name check.
Yes.
That you do of everyone. And it must be because now, you know, with a historical perspective, looking back at just everything that was happening in Detroit, all those bands at the same time.
Yes.
You know, and the MC5, Iggy, you know.
We were all local bands. None of us were a national band. We were all local bands. Every weekend we would play, it would be like Alice, Iggy, and The Who. But it would be a place that, I know, but back then The Who didn't play arenas. They played ballrooms. That was maybe 1,100 people. And then the next week it would be, you know, the MC5, Bob Seger, Alice Cooper, and The Kinks. Wow. You know, but this happened every weekend, and we were best friends with all these bands.
But also the interesting thing I want to know is at the same time, right? I mean, how a city can absorb this much. But at the same time, on the other side of the street, you got Motown.
Yeah.
Were the two things kind of mutually exclusive, or did you feed off it? Because that was such a joyous, you know.
Oh, it was. It was the most fun time because every band was a great rock and roll band. We finally showed up at this thing called the Saugatuck Pop Festival. And Shep said, the first place we get a standing ovation, we're moving to. So we show up 3 hours early, and there's the MC5. I'd never heard of the MC5, and they were a show band.
Yeah.
And they were political, and they were White Panthers, and they were in your face. And I went, wow, that's pretty powerful. Then some guy named Iggy and the Stooges come up, and they're three chord rock, and it's just dun 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 dun. And there's this guy that's just sort of Mick Jagger, but he has no shirt on, no shoes. Half the time he's naked on stage, and he is the ultimate punk. Yeah. But it's great. And the theater of it was so good. I went, unbelievable. You know, and then we went on with our kind of theater and they loved it. They loved the whole idea of what we were doing. And that at that point, they realized I was from Detroit. So I was the long lost brother. And we moved there. And that all those guys were our friends. You know, I mean, we all became really good friends.
Was it not that point, though? It was in L.A. when you famously threw the chicken out into the audience and everyone
actually,
was.
It was Toronto. It was Toronto. Yeah.
That was the Cybertuck Festival, wasn't it?
That was the Peace and Love Festival in Toronto. and here was the great thing. We're going on between the Doors and John Lennon and Yoko, right? At the very end of the night. And at the very end of the night, we go on and we open up this feather pillow with a CO2 cartridge in the middle of this chaotic song. And it looks like a snowstorm up there. And I look down and there's a chicken on stage. No, I didn't bring the chicken. Somebody in the audience went, I got my wallet, I got my keys, I got my ticket, got my chicken. And so never have been in on a farm in my life. It had feathers. It had wings. It should fly as far as I was concerned. So I picked it up and I threw it in the audience. And, you know, chickens don't fly as much as they plummet. The audience tore it to pieces.
Oh my God.
So you were actually innocent here. You made it's not like Ozzy Osbourne where he bit the head off.
No, this to me was there was white feathers and there was a white chicken. It was perfect. It was great. It was something, if somebody's going to take the chicken home and name it Alice, it's going to be their pet. I didn't think at all they were going to tear it to pieces. Now, the kicker to the story is this: the first eight rows were people all in wheelchairs. They're the ones that destroyed the chicken. So that made it even more bizarre. Frank Zappa calls me up the next day and he goes, "Did you kill a chicken on stage last night?" I said, "No." And he says, "Well, don't tell anybody. They love it."
Alice, is that what you wrote under my wheels?
The stage must have been a complete mess, because the inner stage manager in me is wondering, sure, if John Lennon is about to come on, you've got a stage that's got to be cleaned up, which is
not at all. They absolutely loved it, because Yoko's a, you know, performance artist. So she saw this and thought, that's great. We had the Doors on one side when we're doing this and John Lennon on the other side, and they're cheering us on. They loved the fact that everything was covered in feathers. You know, that was just added more to the, let's break away from just the same old stage. Now, when you come on after Alice, you got to deal with all this stuff.
So Alice, we don't have long with you, unfortunately, but it's great that you've decided to go back to Detroit to make this new album and to with Bob Ezrin, who Guy knows well from Pink Floyd, and Wayne Kramer is even on the record, isn't he?
It was not going to be a conceptual record, and Bob and I work in nothing but conceptual records. For like 14 albums were all conceptual, and I said, let's just write 14 really good hard rock songs. And then that took us to, well, where does that come from? Detroit. So I said, well, then let's go to Detroit. Let's write the album in Detroit, about Detroit, and let's record it there and use all Detroit players. And then we got then it became a concept. Yep. So now we can plug into Motown a little bit with $1,000 high heel shoes. You know, we turned that into a Motown song. We had a blues song with Bonamassa playing it. You know, we had punk, but it was generally a hard rock guitar album in your face, you know.
But I must say, Alice, you sound incredibly vital and, dare I say it, sort of young on it. I mean, your voice is completely there. It's fantastic.
Well, you know, I never smoked. And I quit drinking 38 years ago. So that had a lot to do with the fact that I can still go and do five shows a night. I mean, a week, you know, and not be tired.
And how was Wayne Kramer meeting up with him and you know, getting the MC5 vibe?
Well, the thing I noticed about it, this, and you'll love this because you've been in the studio with different players and you can feel what they're about. And all of a sudden I got all these Detroit players in there. I got Johnny B from, you know, from Mitch Ryder on drums, who is the premier drummer in Detroit. And I got Mark Farner, you know, from, and so here's a great band. And I realized, I'm sitting there listening and I go, you know, there's a lot of R&B in how they play. They're playing rock and roll, but you can hear those little licks, that little flavor of R&B in there.
Syncopation in there.
Yeah. And you sit there and I went, any other time I would have said, oh no, we can't do that. On this album, I said, absolutely, leave it in. Let's, because I want this to feel like Detroit, you know? And for the, we didn't write it all about real people. I created characters that would have.
Oh, that great I Hate You one. That's,
yes. Well, that was the original band. And when bands break up, they generally hate each other. Our band didn't really, our band didn't, was not like that.
Yeah, but where would lawyers be without bands, you know?
Well, we went, you know, in different ways. We didn't divorce as much as we separated. We always played on each other's albums. We always stayed in touch with each other.
Oh,
we were best friends.
That's so nice to hear.
Yeah. So when I said, guys, let's write some songs, they wrote Social Debris with me. So we decided, let's write a song where each one of us roasts the other guy. So yeah. I'll sing this song. I'll sing this about Dennis. Dennis will sing about Neil. Neil will sing about Mike. You know, and then at the end, our late guitar player, Glenn Buxton, was like, we really hate you for leaving that space on stage.
Oh.
And that was like the heart, you know, the heart tear right there. But I mean, we really couldn't be Alice without Glenn.
No. And as a kid growing up, Glenn was, I remember, you know, he was the other than you, Alice, he was the guy I was looking at. I mean, can I still cash this in, Alice?
Yes.
I'm holding up the $1 billion note that was in the $1 billion Babies record, which I still have.
I have to admit one thing. The British audience is what really sent Alice, which really made us, because they did not mind.
It would be. You were so made for Britain, I've got to say, you know.
But everybody felt we were from Britain because of the style, the way we looked and everything like that. And the fact that we got so much negative press from Mary Whitehouse and Leo Absey.
You know, yes.
They tried to ban us. And I kept sending her flowers and sending him cigars because every time we said something, we would sell more records, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Panties from Heaven at the Hollywood Bowl. I mean, what parent wouldn't love that?
Absolutely. We stalled a lorry in Piccadilly Square on a Friday with a giant picture of me with nothing but a snake around me. And it was the front page of the London Times. And the great thing about it was they loved it. They loved the Hollywood publicity stunt. And we just went, this is great. London gets it. They get the joke. They get the sense of humor. You know, so we literally broke out of London. You know,
you were so important to me. I mean, Schools Out was a massive record when I remember being on my school holiday and all singing Schools Out. Now I don't like it because my kids are all at home because they're not allowed to go to school. And I'm like homeschooling.
Yeah, it was very prophetic.
Alice, it's been an incredible treat to speak to you.
Oh, thank you, guys. Thank you. Say hi to Nick for me.
We will.
Oh, we'll do.
Yeah.
Good luck with the album.
Thank you so much for talking to us. And yeah, the album's fantastic.
We will see you guys in London, hopefully August or September.
Well, that was nowhere near enough.
He's busy. He's busy. He's a busy man.
He's a busy boy. He's actually got an album. He's got a very, very good album to promote. So,
you know what? He looks exactly the same, doesn't he? As when we bought the records in the early 70s, when he first came on the scene. This guy hasn't aged. He's so full of life. You were right, what you said.
I've got a bit of trivia for you.
Ah, go on.
Which I obviously wouldn't have time for. Well, because it's of no interest to Alice whatsoever. But for some reason, I'm going
to
humiliate myself.
Is it interest to our listeners?
I think it might be. Which is that in 1985, Crocus, who I always thought were German, turns out were a Swiss heavy metal band, did a cover of Schools Out. And I am in the video playing an American high school student.
Are you? How old have you been?
22 or something, 23.
It's because your dad was an actor.
No, it's just because I knew the producer. You know, that's what you did.
Oh, I see.
Everyone was always in everyone's videos.
I see. I thought Crocus were a 70s band. No.
I said 1985. God's sake.
Did you?
No, I wasn't actually at school. I was grown up and everything.
You know, I'm not listening. Whenever you speak, I don't normally listen. You know?
No, I know.
Anyway, how do you to get Alice? We got Alice on the show. We got Alice on the show. We're going somewhere.
Yay.
You've all been good. Whoever you are out there that's been on our show, you've all been good. And we
that's our ticket out of here.
That's the end. So next week will be equally as fantastic. Don't you worry. We're just building this.
Yes.
And thank you for listening.
We haven't peaked yet. Stay with us.
But this is a good reason to subscribe and do all of those things that are really nice, and like leave a review and all of those things, because we are loving this, especially in lockdown.
All right, it's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.